3D printing is just about mature enough for manufacturers to begin adopting it on a wide scale. Hi, everybody. I'm Bob Bowman, Editor-in-Chief of Supply Chain Brain, and this is the Supply Chain Brain Podcast. Printing, known more formally as additive manufacturing, is more than 40 years old. But it's taken all that time to be considered a viable means of production. Part of that has been the need to improve the technology so that it can be deployed in everyday operations, and part has been the usual acceptance curve, some might call it the hype cycle, along which every new technology needs to travel. Whatever the reason, additive manufacturing is here to stay and has especially caught the interest of the military. On this episode, we'll learn about the current state of the technology from Greg Hayes, Senior Vice President of Global Additive Minds with EOS, a leader in powder bed additive manufacturing. It's still in the early stages of adoption, he says, but the potential for broader acceptance is strong. And we'll talk about what stands in the way of full development. Here's my conversation with Greg Hayes. Greg Hayes, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bob. Nice to be here.
Greg, tell me about EOS's Additive Minds team. What is your mission and purpose?
EOS, as a privately owned company in the space of additive manufacturing, is one of the largest companies and has been around for about 30 years, which we're really proud of. So that makes us one of the older companies in the space of additive. So as this 30-year-old company, we dabbled a lot with the concept of business development, how to build out a sales team. And what we truly believe at this moment is that we are in a period of consultative sales with our customers. And the topic of consultative sales, working on projects together with our prospective customers, working on even government-funded research, and also workforce development, educating engineers out there to use our technology in an effort to speed up and ease adoption, is all bundled together in one team at EOS, which we call our Additive Minds. It's applied engineering on steroids with the purpose of growing additive manufacturing. And of course, as EOS, trying to take a piece of the pie that we can build.
Okay. In parallel to that, tell me, what is the state of the art of additive manufacturing or 3D printing? I don't know if you consider those to be interchangeable terms or not. But has it made progress? What recent advances have taken place that allow the technology to catch on and be more applicable in more situations?
That's an interesting question, because I think that I would tend to argue the thing that is helping additive catch on the most is that technological advancements have slowed down. I'll try to maybe explain that in a way that makes sense. In any emerging technology space, right, we're always looking for what's next, what's the development roadmap look like? And oftentimes, companies and industries that are looking to use this new technology, they are asking the question of, how do I de-risk stepping in and using this technology when maybe next year it's going to look different? And in 2 years from now, the ROI that I can get with this technology will be completely different than if I step in today. It almost causes a sort of like delayed adoption if you are innovating too fast in this manufacturing space. We can talk a lot about the advancements in additive manufacturing. I love all of the technological advancements, but the fact that for the last basically 20 years or so, using a laser with a powder-based additive manufacturing system across multiple OEMs, not just EOS, but some of our competitors as well, as we've been able to stabilize that technology and show that it really can be used, now give faith and promise and shows a bit of a track record for manufacturing companies to step in and start with the adoption.
It sounds like you're on the type of maturity curve that every new technology undergoes, that you get to a point where maybe the innovation does slow down, but that's when the true applications begin. Also, the Gartner hype cycle also describes that the progress of technology like that. So it sounds like you guys are right on track in that way. Are we at the point, though, where 3D printing or additive manufacturing is a major factor in manufacturers' decisions as to where to source their manufacturing? In other words, is this an impetus to bring some manufacturing back from Asia, say, or back from China to the United States or North America because of 3D printing and its advances?
That's the million-dollar question that all companies in this space are trying to figure out, right? There was just a really interesting conference that happened once a year in New York 2 weeks ago called Additive Manufacturing Strategies. And here, a number of business leaders in the industry, we all get together and we debate that question that you exactly just posed. And I think the answer is, at the moment, no. Additive manufacturing is not adopted in any sense of large impact into the supply chains of the United States or into the supply chains of anything that we could call nearshoring or standing up new workforce development activities. But what we do think is that the time is now, and that you talked about the Gardner hype cycle, that the curve is starting to go up again, right? After the trough of disillusionment, yeah. I think it's called. And so we all believe now in this increase for a variety of reasons. And we see many organizations and now making the first step in this direction to really implement additive. Has it happened yet? Is it 2%, 5% of manufacturing in the United States of America? No. The start is happening, and that gives me a lot of positive momentum.
The military has taken an interest in this technology, specifically with regard to some of the work you're doing. What is the history of the military's involvement and interest in 3D printing or additive manufacturing?
The military, or I should say rather, the Department of Defense, which covers all branches of the military plus a bit more, has really taken an interest in how do we secure the production of defense-related goods for the foreseeable future. And given that we see an increase in demands coming down the road, not only to geopolitical forces at play, but also due to aging infrastructure, they see that coming. They see a manufacturing base inside of the United States of America, which is also aging and quite honestly has been forgotten about. I'm using air quotes now for the last decades or so. So how do we reinvigorate the manufacturing base and use that to prepare for this upcoming demand that we know is coming, not only for workforce development, but also for the needs of the United States Air Force and the United States Navy and the Army and so on. And so what the Department of Defense is doing is they are looking at new manufacturing technologies to spur innovation in manufacturing in the United States. And additive is one such technology that they are relying on to make that increase. There's all different types of additive manufacturing, right?
Well, let's talk specifically about what you folks are doing, that you're helping to build special components mm-hmm. for submarines for the Navy at the Center of Excellence in Danville, Virginia. Whose Center of Excellence is that? Is that yours or the Navy's, first of all?
Correct, yeah. So that's the Navy's Center of Excellence. What the Navy has done in Danville, which is really interesting, is they've brought together a number of these new manufacturing technologies. And what we are doing as EOS, we're very, really proud to be the powder bed additive portion of that center of excellence. If you walk in there, there are a number of different technologies on hand. And EOS specifically, we don't make all different types of additive manufacturing. We focus in on what we call powder bed fusion, which is using a metal powder or a plastic powder and melting this powder together with a laser. That's the specialty of our organization. There are other organizations there that use different technologies to do additive type processes. What's really cool about the Danville Center of Excellence is they use it not only to demonstrate this technology to the larger Department of Defense, but they also use it to make real components that are then tested and put into the different supply chains. And they do that in such a way that they can take the lessons learned, package them together in a smart, qualified way, and use that package to now try and stand up a larger supply chain at other locations inside of the United States. It's really a seeding ground for implementing new technology. And it's an awesome thing to be a part of, and we're super happy to help out.
Is it still in early and pilot stages, or is this actually being incorporated into specifically submarines today?
A little bit of both. The Danville Center of Excellence is up and running. It's been a little bit over a year now that the center has been established. So it is not in any sort of pilot stage. It's up and running. The components that they are making there with together with our help are also in early stages of being incorporated into submarines. So there have been a handful of components that have made their way onto various boats and used in different assemblies. But I don't want to give you the impression that it's a large factory of machines that are cranking out parts for boats. That's not the case. It's a demonstration, true center of excellence using some applications to print. And then if that part is needed in any sort of high quantity, that can then be transferred to another manufacturing company using the lessons learned at the Center of Excellence to stand up manufacturing in other locations. So it's being used and it's growing, and it's exciting to see though.
Let's stick with the submarines for a moment. Potentially, what in a submarine might be made from an additive manufacturing process?
You're asking a specific question, which has a number of maybe non-specific answers. So let's talk through that a little bit. So the first thing we have to do is we have to think about the fact that a submarine is very large when compared to the manufacturing additive processes that exist today. Now, first of all, not everything on a submarine is going to be printed, nor probably should it be printed, right? There will be certain components that could be. The second thing to think about is that using additive manufacturing, that means many different things. There are additive manufacturing techniques which deposit material, for example, using a robot arm, moving around, kind of like you would move a hot glue gun around on the table and build up a structure of metal. And there are pluses and minuses to this type of technology, but you can build relatively large structures there, maybe not with high resolution. And then there are additive manufacturing processes that use a powder bed. And then you typically have components that are about 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet and smaller in kind of size. And the area of operation where EOS is working is in that smaller 3 foot by 3 foot by 3 foot zone. And here, there are a number of components in a submarine which are able to be printed and can take advantage of different aspects of the printing process. One really good example of that are parts that are made out of a material called copper nickel, which is a material which is non-corrosive in a saltwater environment. And so these components can be any sort of valves or small hinges type structures or bracket components and things like that. And those types of components are interesting to print because of the long lead time sometimes associated with obtaining that component through traditional methods.
Needless to say, on a submarine or anything like that, the quality of those parts has to be just absolutely 100%. How do components today that are created through additive manufacturing stack up against the same components that were reproduced or manufactured the traditional way in terms of quality and dependability? Are they equal in that way?
That's a really, really important topic to discuss. And oftentimes, when you talk about additive manufacturing, you uncover a lot of fears of the unknown. That the technology is not well understood, then a lot of questions get raised, and sometimes unnecessary fears bubble up out of nowhere. The truth is, especially with all powder bed technologies, and not just EOS, but our competitor companies out there, the quality of the material that is produced out of this technology is better than the quality of material that is produced out of the casting process. And So comparing like to like, the size of the flaws in a casting process are larger than the size of the flaws in an additive manufacturing process. And of course, there are flaws in a casting process, and those components are used every day now in submarine applications. And in the additive process, it's not a flawless process either. There are also flaws. Some can be different than or look different than what you get out of a casting process. And so you have to really understand how the process works and what to look for. But back to our original topic, which is the last 20 years, what has changed and the fact that things have been relatively stable using a laser to process this powder metal, the process is really well understood. And so you can work through the qualification of components to understand what should the properties of that component be, and the qualification then of the process that it goes through. So every part needs to be printed the same, and the qualification of the machine as well. So the machine has to operate inside of an environment which has a quality management system. The machine has to be in XYZ working order and has to be run in a certain way with a certain known material. This is a recipe that needs to be followed within a quality management system and will produce a part which is then qualified. Yeah. And these qualified parts can be used in submarine applications for sure.
What about cost? I think we can imagine that in these early days of the technology, the costs are probably higher than they will be down the line when this technology is more accepted. But even then, in the future, is it competitive with old ways of making stuff?
It's collaborative more than it is competitive, right? So a casting process is relatively inexpensive. However, it is expensive when it comes to time. The casting process can also be expensive when it comes to reworking a casting. So oftentimes casting needs to be fixed before it can be utilized, even though the part has already been cast. There's long lead times that exist in implementing castings in a manufacturing process. And the lead times when it comes to additive manufacturing are much, much smaller. So on a cost per part basis, you may run into a scenario where the cost per part is more expensive if you produce it additively, but it is 10 times faster in availability than it is if you wait for the casting alternative. So it's a really interesting supply chain engineering optimization problem that these organizations need to do to figure out which technology should we source our components from and for how long and for which applications to balance out cost versus timing.
Even taking into account the maturity of the technology as you've described it to me, what advances, if any, still have to happen to make additive manufacturing really reach its full potential in the manufacturing process in the years ahead?
There are a few major improvements that we need to make as an industry, and especially in the United States, that we need to make as a manufacturing ecosystem. The biggest challenge that I see in front of us truly is workforce development. We need more engineers trained in how to use this technology, more operational teams trained in how to implement this technology, really standing up a workforce that can use this technology in all of the positive attributes that are possible today. That's a massive, massive challenge. It's something that many universities are working on. We as EOS, we try our best to play our piece of that puzzle in putting out operator certification courses and things like that. That's a major hurdle. After that, you now have the standing up of manufacturing supply chains, especially if you want to talk about the United States, that don't exist today. If you look at supply chains out there in the automotive industry, even in the aerospace industry, there are the beginnings of additive in those supply chains, but it needs to be stood up in a much bigger way and then utilize that workforce that will be developed to really start the snowball rolling.
Greg Hayes of EOS, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me about the state of the art of additive manufacturing today and what you folks at EOS are doing and what the future might look like. I really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Hey, thank you so much. It was awesome to talk through everything. I'm positive about the future. I want to end on that note and excited for implementation to come.
That was my conversation with Greg Hayes of EOS, talking about the development of additive manufacturing. We're online at www.supplychainbrain.com, where we post a new episode of this podcast for streaming or downloading every Friday. You can also read our Think Tank blog, watch thousands of videos, and access all of our other content, including the digital edition of our magazine. Look for us on Facebook and LinkedIn, follow us on X at SCBrain, and also watch videos on our YouTube channel. You can also download or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Got any comments or suggestions on this or any episode? Email me at rbowman@supplychainbrain.com. Stay well and see you next time.